Hey, Brendan.
Hello, Alan.
The Not a Thing podcast is back for episode 194. It feels like such a long time.
It has been since it's just the two of us.
Yeah, special thanks to Jürgen, who had a fine last appearance on the show, and we talked about universal basic income and things related to that. Please feel free to check that one out. He told me in the intervening weeks that he was getting a lot of compliments on the show, which is great. I didn't really get a lot of those compliments, so I'm I don't know what that means, but if you would like to comment on our show and tell us how great it is, that'd probably be real great. That'd be a thing. Feel free to tweet at us or let us know on our Facebook page. Visit the posts on notathingpodcast.com and let the HAL 900 know, and we'll you know, make the world a better place because we get to hear how great you think we are.
No, it's not saying how great we are; it's how great Jürgen is.
Yeah.
Because he is a very good guest.
He is, and we hope to have
one of our better episodes.
Yeah, we definitely hope to have him on again. Sans time difference, you know, in the near future, we'll see how that goes. But in the meantime, we're still on our march to 200. I think at this rate, I mean, barring, you know, too many more kind of vacation weeks for the show, we will probably hit that one in September, which is exciting. I know there's a show that we're both going to in September, which may coincide with the day we're going to do the show. So we'll see how that works. There's some play in the schedule. If you would like to be on the schedule, if you'd like to be on the show as a guest, or actually, yeah, just as a guest. We don't need any more hosts. but if you'd
if
like
you
to be on,
challenge me for my host spot. Bring it.
Sure. We are opening Thunderdome for that.
I will step into the Thunderdome.
Please let us know via the normal means, and we'd love to have you on. It's always a thing to have guests on the show, and it's a fun kind of break for us because we don't have to do as much topic searching generally. But in the intervening weeks since our last show, we've done a lot of topic searching, and we have a lot to talk about, so we're gonna get into the show here and talk about some stuff that I think was filed either yesterday or today by the EFF. It's a suit against the federal government over the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. It's something we've talked about lots on the show. It's piece of legislation that got through in, I think, 98 or something to that effect, that kind of infamously was there for copyright protection and has since been misused and abused in all sorts of ways. The EFF, Electronic Frontier Foundation, has championed a lot of reforms of things related to copyright law and specifically stuff related to the DMCA. And this suit is about digital rights management, DRM. So the stuff that we've talked about also on many a show about how it hinders any kind of innovation or progress or really any kind of experimentation, because it elevates anything with software to this like magical land of you don't own it anymore. It's still owned by the you know, end user license agreements and the companies that make it, which is really hampering the tinkering, any amount of tinkering or anything like that. One interesting application of this is that farmers are being affected by digital rights management and the DMCA. So farmers. Or modern farmer, which is it's either a magazine or a website or both. it's at least a website because that's where we got the story from. But
it's a magazine, actually.
Yeah, print magazine. It's still a thing, at least among farmers. But farmers own tractors. It's not a stereotype. They actually do that. And what's more interesting is that the tractors have become a lot more technologically advanced. And one of the things that's turned into is that the DMCA is being applied to those tractors. So John Deere, specifically makers of all sorts of things, but tractors definitely, their license agreement says that if you want to work on your tractor because it breaks down or something to that effect, you have to take it to a service center, but not any service center. It has to be a John Deere service center. Otherwise, it invalidates the warranty and you can't work on it. This is in contrast to cars, which don't have that kind of provision. And you could take your car to any auto shop you want. And generally, it's cheaper and oftentimes better than bringing it to the dealer's auto shop, at least in my experience. So you would think that tractors were held with the same kind of setup, but specifically because of the DMCA, they're unable to do that. And so this is just one of the many abuses of the DRM provisions in the Digital Millennium Copyright Act are still kind of out there and lingering. So we're big fans of the EFF. They're definitely a thing. Hopefully they can remove DRM or at least talk about ways to mitigate its effects and reduce the kind of burden on everyone that's using everything, because as we've been saying on the show for many, many episodes, you know, the internet is here and it's in a lot of things. You might even say there's an internet of things, but I would not say that because that's not a thing.
You have said that so many times. What are you talking about?
but yeah, the whole thing with the Internet of Things is that everything is internet enabled, and if everything's internet enabled, it's all under the DMCA because of how it was written. And so we applaud the EFF in kind of figuring out ways to modernize that that piece of legislation. It's crazy to think something 18 years old needs to be modernized, but yes, indeed it does. So hopefully that gets looked at. And hopefully other laws get looked at too regarding other speaking of laws, there's been a lot of stir. There was a lot of stir in the media a while ago about the iPhones from San Bernardino shooters and how Apple wasn't going to allow breaking into them and things like that. Well, biometrics and specifically iPhones are in the news again. There's a company that is selling essentially these little rings that you can wear over your finger if you want to use the biometrics in the phone to like unlock it or do any of the payment systems or identification stuff in the phone, but you don't want to use your actual fingers. So it looks like a Band-Aid, and it has a pattern on it which can be recognized by the fingerprint reader, but it isn't your fingerprint. It's some specific one that the company assigns you when you sign up for the Band-Aids or whatever. I'm not sure what they're calling them, but it gives you the benefits of using the biometric features without putting your biometric data out there. And I think it's a thing. I think it's super inconvenient, but I also think that biometrics as ID is still weird. It's still something that can be used and abused kind of by a lot of different people in agencies. It's not as foolproof as a lot of people think, and it's not as it's not necessarily you know, in all ways better than like a password or a passcode would be.
Nobody has to cut out your tongue to get a password. People can't cut off your fingers for biometrics.
Well, as shown by some police this last week, they don't even have to cut your fingers off to do that. So there was a murder victim, and the police, in searching for evidence, found the murder victim's phone and decided they wanted to unlock the phone. And they went about contacting a company which did a scan of the deceased's thumb, and then 3D printed a model of the thumb out of some material that I guess is capacitive and conductive, so it would you know, work with the phone, and put it on the fingerprint reader, and sure enough, the phone unlocked. So it's just, you know, it's not a perfect system. It's still something that needs maybe another couple factors or a different way of doing it. I think it is a convenient method, but I still think that it shouldn't be the only method for a lot of things. Interestingly enough, Apple did change the time that it takes, or not the time that it takes, but it changed its policy for the fingerprint readers, in that you can use the fingerprint reader to unlock the phone, but if the phone has been rebooted, or if it's been more than, I think it's 2 or 3 days of just using fingerprints, it will prompt you for your passcode, kind of as a second factor, which I think is a nice thing. And it wouldn't necessarily invalidate this use case, but it might for that law enforcement. And I think it's hard because in that case, you know, they're trying to, you know, break into a phone of someone who's dead in order to find evidence about their death. And I think that while that case, you know, is a valid thing, just blanket allowing them to do that sets too much of a precedent for what they can and can't do with your biometric data. I think, and I'm not sure, in California, they can't compel you to unlock your own phone with your fingerprint. I think.
The Fifth Amendment?
I mean,
self-incrimination?
I think they're actually going for Fourth with due process, but in any case, I think there's at least provisions in California that are around that. Unfortunately, it's not one I remember. Hopefully, I don't run into that. We'll be looking that up after the show. But kind of staying in the police vein, we're going to move over to not actually police, but something that is used for private policing. It's something we've talked about on the show in the past, the Nightscope robots. These are the kind of white, they kind of look like big cones with a rounded top. They sort of look like Daleks, but they don't have the cool accessories sticking out of them. So
it's like a Dalek had a robot baby with a personal massager.
Yes, that's.
I think, can we call this the fuck RoboCop section?
Yeah, also known as RoboCop 2. But yes, so the Nightscope robot, it's deployed in a bunch of places for security. It has like a camera, and it has some stock phrases that it can say, but it's essentially a roving security camera. But it's set to be autonomous as well, so it goes and patrols and rolls around. And I guess they have one at Stanford Mall, it ran into like a 3-year-old kid that
is a 16-month-old.
Oh, that's even worse.
As a tiny human.
Yeah. It ran into a 16-month-old and knocked him down and then proceeded to continue to try to roll over him. It couldn't see him because he was too short, or they haven't released, you know, what happened exactly. I don't know if these are the robots rising up to get us.
This isn't the first time this has happened, apparently. It's knocked over other toddlers.
I think they gotta, you know, maybe angle the cameras a little lower, maybe. But I think what this illustrates pretty plainly for anyone that is still under the delusion that the laws of robotics are actual laws.
No, they're just in Asimov books. They're not real, unfortunately. Yeah.
Right, right. The provision, the law about them not causing humans to come to harm is
through action or inaction.
Right. Pretty much out the window.
That's the first law of robotics. Rule number one.
Right, right. those are a thing, but they're a thing in a book. When confronted with the real world, robots are actually hurting people. So hopefully they take a look at that and figure out what's going on.
Think of the children.
I for one would love to be on the firing squad that executes that robot. I don't know if that's a thing yet, but
it should be. Yeah, sign me up. Let's start an anti-robot militia. Bad guys.
Yeah, I'm sure that'd be fine. That's well, we're gonna go with that. But kind of speaking of using robots to harm others, the resolution to a really terrible situation. There was the shootout in, was it Dallas?
In Dallas, yeah.
There was a shootout in Dallas where some cops were targeted, which were it's not a thing. As much as we demand better standards for cops, we actually do like the police. It's not a you can simultaneously like the police and want them to be held to a higher standard than they are, and those are not incompatible, I think. So
yeah.
So in any case, we were following that story, and one of the things that happened was they had cornered the suspect who had fired on the cops, and they had exchanged some gunfire, but it was looking to be like an intractable standoff, or at least intractable in terms of what they wanted to do, which was not to have any more cops get shot. And so the police department there decided to use, I believe this is not a purpose-built robot for what it did, but they had a remote control robot, which I assume is for bomb disposal or otherwise inspection of bombs. And they essentially hung a grenade on it and rolled it into where the suspect was and then detonated it. And this is so amazingly not a thing. I don't know where to start with how how not okay this was, but
and that, to be clear, that whole situation is not okay. We right. don't in any way condone violence against police officers,
right?
But that's a really bad precedent to set.
Yeah,
and it's like, instead of waiting somebody out, you're going to go in and blow them up.
Yeah.
That does not sound like due process, right. Even though it was a terrible situation and that person deserved to be brought to justice. That's not justice.
Yeah. I mean, we don't have an understanding of what it was, you know, tactically, how he was set up or anything like that. But just looking at the absolute fact of it, it's not shooting to defend oneself. It's not shooting to necessarily prevent something immediate happening. This falls under, you know, I mean, it's premeditated violence. You have to think, oh, the way we're going to kill this guy is we're going to put a bomb on this robot and roll it out to him. Is this something that they had planned for? Is this something that they thought of in the moment? If it's not something they thought of in the moment, did they ever think to have a policy about this? It really does set a worrying precedent, because you're using drone strikes on Americans. It's really essentially what it was. It's you're killing a person without being directly connected to the act of that killing. And it's really rough, because obviously he was someone that needed to be, you know, stopped. I still am concerned that the judge, jury, and executioner aspect of it is a little worrying.
As much as I enjoy watching the Judge Dredd films, I don't want to live in a world with judges.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see what comes out of that. I'm sure a lot more will be written and said about what happened.
And hopefully these will be things that don't continue.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of moving over into stuff a little more hopeful with drones and robots. Facebook test flew the Aquila, which means eagle. It's a very large plane that is solar powered, and it's meant to act as a flying Wi-Fi access point. They say that it can fly 60,000 feet in the air, which I don't know what kind of Wi-Fi things you're putting on there that'll work from 60,000 feet away, but if it works, it works. It's meant to bring broadband internet access to areas that don't have general wired infrastructure. It's meant to be fed internet via laser, if I'm remembering right in the article. And it's a solar powered flying platform, essentially, that is meant to have like a 3-month flight plan, and it just circles and gives and acts, like I said, as a Wi-Fi access point. It's interesting in a number of ways. First of all, you know, giving internet to regions without internet, I think is a thing. There's different ways that it's been looked into, microsatellites, different things about having mesh net Wi-Fi, where you have devices that not only access the internet, but they also kind of find each other and pass the internet along between them. There's a bunch of different ways to do it, and so this is certainly one way, which I think is novel. They have to overcome a bunch of challenges, specifically the first or the longest flight without landing, I think, is still like 2 weeks. And if they want something that lasts 3 months, there's a lot more work that has to get put into making sure something like that works. The other thing that I'd read, which was just kind of a quick thing, is that the way it's launched. Did you read that part
about? No.
So it doesn't have landing gear to cut back on weight and drag. And so what the way it's launched is, it's attached to a dolly that has wheels by straps, and then the like a car or a truck pulls it, and it gets it up to speed. And at that speed, they have little squib rounds that explode and blow apart the straps, so the drone flies away.
Huh.
So it's pulled kind of like a kite, and then then it's launched. So my question is, how does it come down?
probably crashes.
I think that is an issue, like finding out how to safely navigate it down when it fails or in bad weather or what have you, I think is something that has to get worked on. Yeah. But the other thing that's interesting is Facebook's track record for providing the internet to underdeveloped areas is not great. There was a story a while ago, and I don't know if we ever picked it up, about I think it was called Facebook Basics in India, and it was a plan to give I think it was just phones or some level of internet access that very cheaply that gave you access to like some mail services, some websites, Facebook, of course, and it ran afoul of net neutrality laws in India, and they said they didn't want it, because if you're going to restrict access, or if you're going to give internet and provide internet to everyone, you have to give all of the internet to everyone, not just your slice of it. So I think hopefully they learn from that and are not putting making it like mandatory to log into Facebook or something like that in order to use the internet. That would be best. But flying internet Wi-Fi, if it's really net neutral, I think it's a great thing. There's certainly a lot of places that don't have the internet, and as we've said many times on the show, yes, the internet is a thing. So let's get it out there. talking about kind of another interesting and esoteric thing about that we love to talk about on the show is autonomous cars. Definitely a thing. Congrats to Elon Musk for releasing his Tesla master plan. Right. It's got some interesting stuff in there. Maybe we'll talk about it on a different show. But autonomous cars are coming. They'll probably be here real soon. And Germany is putting together some laws regarding autonomous cars, specifically having black boxes in them. So if one of the comparisons that people have made about autopilot, specifically in Tesla, is that it's similar to autopilot in a plane, in that, sure, you can use it, but you wouldn't use it to take off or land. It's just used for cruising. But similarly to planes, Tesla has a way to record all of the activity that happens with regards to the car's like motion and what systems are engaged and not, and they're actually pulling all that data to make their ostensibly to make their the autopilot smarter. So Germany is saying that things like that, there should be something to record all of that data in all cars, and it should be mandated, or not all cars, but all cars that are going to have autonomous functions, which will probably be all cars soon. Germany, of course, still reeling, I think, from the Volkswagen scandal about diesel cars, and so is trying to shore up their auto industry a little bit. I know that their Volkswagen especially is really pumping a lot of money into having electric cars and having more kind of smarter features built into their cars, like the new I don't remember what model it is, but there's a car that they're claiming has a similar autopilot level feature to Tesla, but the cars are not currently connected in any way. There's no connected fleet like there is for Tesla. So the cars are autonomous, but they're also autonomous from each other. And that's something that we've talked about on the show in the past. Like when the cars can talk to each other and tell each other what they're going to do, like, I'm going to brake, so don't speed up and run into me, or, you know, changing lanes. And when the cars can talk to each other, that's when the autonomous car stuff, I think, gets really interesting. So we're looking forward to that too, hopefully. I think there's levels of car autonomy that I think was defined by the National Highway Transit and Safety Administration. And like level one is like, you know, having cruise control essentially. And level two is where everything's at now anyway, Tesla especially, where there's the ability to kind of respond to traffic and lane keeping. And I think level three is like point-to-point autonomy, and level four is the cars are talking to each other. So we'll see. Maybe. I think black boxes in cars, I think that makes sense. The only thing I would like is that it's not a black box. I would like to be able to look into that box to see that data as the consumer. I think that's something that even I don't think Tesla even does, is that what is that package of data that the car is collecting? Especially because one of the provisions that was asked for the black boxes was a camera inside the car to see what the driver is doing. And they say it's specifically because if a person engages the autopilot mode and then goes to sleep, and then an emergency comes up, normally the autopilot is supposed to signal the driver so the driver can take control and do something. But they want to have a camera trained on the driver, and if the driver is asleep or incapacitated or otherwise not able to deal with the car, that the car takes some kind of fail-safe action. And I'm just concerned that if you're going to put a camera on the inside of a car that I am driving, I would like to see what that camera looks at and where that data is recorded. Privacy schmivacy. I would not want that camera transmitted to the automaker. I don't know. Sometimes I pick my nose when I'm in my car. I don't want anyone to see that. Well, speaking of things being recorded and preserved for, you know, ever. Well, maybe not ever.
No, not forever.
At least until the tape wears out. So VHS tape is still kind of around and a thing, but one of the companies, or rather the last company in Japan to make the components that go into VCRs, has announced that they're probably making the last one this month sometime. Their supply is running out. The demand is low. They shipped something like, I forget, I think it was still like 750,000 VCRs.
It was 750,000, but at their peak, they're making 15 million a year.
Yeah, yeah. So the demand is slowing enough that they have decided they're going to stop making them. So I don't know if that makes all those, you know, huge Disney tapes like even more collector's items than they already are. But the physical media age is slowly, slowly going away.
That's fine with me.
I remember when one of the last movies I ever rented on VHS was The Hunt for Red October, which is a
classic,
freaking classic. And it came in a red plastic case. So the tape, you know, the plastic kind of holder for it, all of that was red. which I thought was, I don't know, it's novel because otherwise they're black. There's not a lot you can do. I mean, they're plastic and you'd think that they could just injection mold different color plastics, but it didn't happen anywhere near as often as you might think. I think they were mostly black and some of them were had kind of a gray-brown kind of thing going on, but I think those were just, like, sun fading. But I do fondly remember things like, you know, dealing with the tracking on the VCR and stuff like that. I do think that that's a technology that I'm fine with going away. The one thing about it that I think is novel is the recording, you know, if recording to, you know, personal recording for stuff via, you know, camcorders and things like that. That was, you know, on physical media, that was really the only way that you could, you know, you could have like one single copy of something. Now with everything being electronic, I don't think you can guarantee that there would ever only be one copy of anything. Not that I know of anything that you would want to record and never distribute, but it's the thing, maybe. kind of moving on from VCRs to something that I don't have a transition here. It's maybe I need one of these because it might help my memory and cognitive kind of ability. So what
I don't think that's how this works.
Okay, so what we're talking about is an advancement in materials, specifically I believe it's a zircon kind of thing. So it's a crystal, I think, that is manufactured that when implanted as a bone is not rejected by the immune system. So that has a lot of applications, but the application that they're using it for is because it's a crystal kind of crystalline kind of mineral. It can be or not necessarily mineral, but compound. It can be made transparent. And so what they want to do is implant these into skulls. So you'd have like a little window in that skull that you could use to, you know, for laser surgery or ongoing maintenance, I guess, of whatever that brain tissue is that might need it due to, damage via, of any kind. I think it's a very, very specific use case, but I also think that it's fantastic that they're able to come up with a material that is not rejected by the body, because it really opens up the possibilities for, more cyborg kinds of implants and connections. So having things, you know, actually built into your body that you know, work with the body in some way.
And it actually could create new therapies for people with brain problems that can be treated with laser surgery.
Mm-hmm.
Like right now they have a limited window that they can work in because they've got to cut a hole in your skull.
Yeah.
But if they can have that closed, then they could potentially have things that would work differently. So that could save people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
And also make you look like Lobot from Empire Strikes Back.
I love when Lando signals him and the lights flash and his eyes open and it's just like, oh, is he, what's going on there? I don't know. And I still don't. I don't know the lore at all about him. He just had this like thing kind of grafted onto the back of his and sides of his head, and I don't know. It was
well, now they did have explanations in the expanded universe, but now that that's all been non-canonized,
mm-hmm.
We'll never really know or in the future, because actually I know we weren't planning on talking about this, but I'm going to They recently announced that they're going to be reintroducing Grand Admiral Thrawn into Star Wars Rebels.
That's what I heard as well.
Which now makes Thrawn canon again.
Yes.
So that could be some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
Star Wars nerd.
I think the whole, that whole series, what was it? Heir to the Empire.
Dark Force Rising. Dark Force and Rising. And,
yes, yes. That,
the Thrawn trilogy.
That trilogy of expanded universe, which I don't know. I don't think it was the first kind of expanded universe thing, but I think it was.
It was the first successful one.
Well, yeah, it's true. I remember. I very clearly remember reading the books. I mean, it was in the like early 90s that came out. You know, I mean, much after the original trilogy had come out, and still before the. You know, the god awfulness that was the prequel trilogy. So, I mean, those were great books. I don't know if I necessarily want them tied into the new kind of series of movies that are happening. But I like the idea that that happened. I remember those stories real well. Timothy Zahn,
yes.
A+. A plus.
Solid series.
Yeah. And Star Wars is still a thing. I think that's I'm more excited about the Star Wars news that came out of Celebration than I'm probably going to be about any of the stuff coming out of Comic-Con this weekend. I don't I'm
that
not
Rogue
following
One looks
it
real good.
Too much, but yeah, that Rogue One, it's not even a trailer, it's like a feature behind the scenes thing, but so much of the footage that's just kind of randomly in there from behind the scenes looks awesome. I mean, it's some of it's not even like the finished footage, it's just them messing around with fighting or whatever, and it looks great.
Well, they can do behind the scenes footage because they're actually doing a lot of stuff practically with practical effects.
Mm-hmm.
When you see the behind the scenes stuff from the prequels, it's like, oh, there's a bunch of people wandering around in front of green sheets.
Yeah. Practical effects still a thing. Hooray. I'm glad. Yeah, I'm actually really glad that Lucas specifically, or you know, Lucasfilm specifically is moving back to practical effects, ILM, because I met some folks from ILM not too long ago as part of a, you know, thing at work. Which was fantastic, and they both kind of lamented that the prequel trilogy was done so much with moved towards doing stuff in the computer rather than practically, because they did some of the movie or some of those movies very practically, and a lot of it completely CG, and just they brought some of the models from like the original films, and it was people were freaking out. It was great. Practical effects still a thing. let's just very quickly move over, because we're in kind of movie and TV spoiler land anyway. Let's quickly talk about a movie that had what felt like almost no practical effects in it, unfortunately, Ghostbusters. So that came out a week and a half ago or so to, I'm sure, the internet's chagrin. I still think it's probably, it's unfortunate how polarized the audience, the viewing audience at large, not necessarily my audience, but the viewing audience at large was to all of the buzz about the movie and how it was going to be made, because it translated into what I think very polarized reviews about it, which I don't think it necessarily deserved. I think it was honestly kind of a middle of the road movie. It ended up being just good. I wouldn't say classic by any means, but it was good. They're clearly trying to launch a franchise out of it, which I'm not necessarily against. if it does anything, because I think the characters were great, the actors did the new characters justice in breathing them into new characters and not just female versions of old characters. I think they did a good job in setting up kind of the fictional New York that it's in. If there's anything about it that I think it calls back to, it feels more like the real Ghostbusters cartoon did. So I don't know how you feel about that in terms of like, if you want to see more of that style versus more of the original Ghostbusters movie. I think that's more of the question for me, is what I like. And I think that's fine. I think that's good. I don't begrudge them for kind of reinventing that property a little bit.
I'll wait till it's on demand.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like I said, it's fine. I wouldn't say rush out and see it. I ended up seeing it in 2D. I can definitely see there were points where they wanted you to see this movie in 3D. Because there are a couple things that come up and it's like, okay, fine. This doesn't do anything in 2D. It's just kind of blah. And so that might be my only kind of major complaint, is that the movie is pretty self-aware about itself. Having things done specifically for 3D, or a couple, more than a couple actually, nods to the original film, or there was even one point where they're watching a video that was of a ghost that they supposedly uploaded to YouTube, and they get a bunch of shitty YouTube comments about it, and it's a little too much because of all the negative buzz that they got for their trailer that was on YouTube. So I think if there's anything that took me out of it, it was those aspects of the movie. But otherwise, it's certainly watchable. Ringing endorsement.
Wow. Well, that's better than your non-endorsement of Independence Day Resurgence.
Yes, yes. Which I found to be like so programmed as to be what was it? Actively mediocre. That's what I called it. Like, it does nothing to challenge you. It goes completely out of its way to be as by the numbers as it could be. And it also really was just boring when it comes down to it. For a movie about fighting aliens, it was kind of boring. So in any case, we hopefully will have more movies to talk about real soon. I know Star Trek's coming out tomorrow, so I'm definitely jumping on that train. And I think we'll be back next week. We should be. We'll do our best.
Yep.
If you'd like to participate in the show or otherwise, just let us know how we're doing. We're doing well, by the way, but please feel free to tell other people that as well. Tweet at us, Facebook us, let us know via our website. And Brendan, I will talk to you next week.
Till next time, Alan.